Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to have everybody here. It's good to be back. I want to start in the fear and loathing file. Fear and loathing, I said. A story from CNN.com. CNN reports that the passenger accused of punching a Southwest Airlines flight attendant in the face is one Viviana Quinones, and she is now facing felony charges for punching aforementioned flight attendant in the face. By the way, the Federal Aviation Administration reports that there have been about 4,000 incidents of, disturbances, rage, violence, let's just say violence, reported this year alone. Nearly 3,000 of the 4,000 involved a face mask in one way or another. And not like a hockey mask, and not like a Richard Nixon mask or an Elvis mask, but one of those obedience masks that the Hyde and Barris administration has now extended the obedience mask mandate out to January of 2022. And at that point in January, they will extend them through November 11th, 2022. That's just a prediction of mine. Anyway, 4,000 violent incidents. I'm sorry, disruptive incidents that sometimes involve violence. But almost always involve a face mask. At least, what is 3,000 out of 4,000? What is that, 70% of the time? It's involving the obedience mask. Well, CNN reports that in the Quinones case, I'm not sure if the N is the ny is on the first N or the second N. So I'm going to say Quinones just in case. That way I cover both N's. And I can't be accused of cultural insensitivity for not using the, I don't even know what that symbol is called over the N. That the Latinx, Hispanic sex, Latinx? No. For all of my Mexican listeners, I don't recognize Latinx. I know you're Mexicans. You know you're Mexicans. We were all comfortable with that before. Nothing wrong with being a Mexican. They're pretty cool. I grew up with a bunch of Mexicans. They were all right. Anyway, get back to the story, by the way. Let me step away from my cultural insensitivity for pointing out the Mexicanness of all the Mexicans I grew up with. At the time, they called themselves Mexicans. There wasn't a Latinx among them, not a single one. And I don't think any of them transitioned to Latinx after we got out of high school and left the West Texas Dust Bowl. As many of us as could got out of there. Anyway, back to the story now. In the Quinones case, the flight attendant came and told Quinones to wear her face mask. It's not clear if Quinones complied, but for whatever reason, the flight attendant approached her a second time. And that is when Quinones stood up, pushed her, and then punched her in the face with allegedly a closed fist. So not just a slap, not just one of those disrespectful, dismissive little back of the hand type things. This was full on closed fist. I saw the video. You saw the video. We all saw the video. And then we rewound it and we watched it again. Those of us who fly a lot, we watched it several times. So, Quinones punched the flight attendant in the face with a closed fist, allegedly. Now, the stewardess claims that her left eye was bruised. She sustained a cut under her left eye, requiring 4 stitches. And that 3 of her teeth were chipped. Although we don't know if those chips occurred beforehand and she's just going for the insurance scale. I might as well get my teeth fixed. Anyway, we don't know. This is all alleged, which is why I'm alleging that her teeth may have been chipped before. since we're at the allegation stage, we can all allege whatever we want. And it'll be up to the lawyers to bamboozle enough people to pull the allegations in one direction or another. But Quiñones, in her defense, claims that she was acting in self-defense. And if you see the video, I mean, a case could be made. Anyway, at what point does it become self-defense to defend someone, to defend oneself against a tyrannical Nazi marching up and down the aisles, making sure you put your mask up over your nose in between every nut, every bite? But you know, having read that story, I'll probably just go and rewatch that video again, and then I won't really think about this story anymore. But for those of you who fly a lot, like I do, there was a noticeable change in the attitudes of the stewardesses after one of them got punched in the face. The tyranny level declined from a 9.9 down to about a 6.7. That's my unscientific opinion on the matter. So there we have it. Fear and loathing in the air, in the skies, the formerly friendly skies, are now filled with fear and loathing because of the obedience mask. And for those of you who just say, I'm enforcing it because I have to keep my job, well, I would quit my job, and that's why I don't have any respect for you. And don't tell me I should have respect for you for compromising your good common sense and your liberty as a free American just to keep your pathetic job, just to eke out a living. Come on, you could eke out a living doing something where you didn't have to sacrifice your honor or your common sense or your dignity or threaten the liberty of others. Not just threaten the liberty of others, but confiscate the liberty of others and enforce irrational, stupid behavior. So at what point are you justified in punching someone in the face? Well, I guess we'll find out from this case whether or not... all right, well, let's move on, because we certainly don't advocate punching anyone in the face ever unless you have a really good reason. And then we wouldn't necessarily advocate it, but we might render judgment in your favor depending on the specifics of the case. All right, now... we will move on into the war file, which is rather depressing, as you can well imagine, what with Afghanistan and all. But the most significant thing happening in Afghanistan right now is probably the revival amongst terrified Muslims who realize that they're about to be killed by even more vicious and cruel Muslims who've just taken over their country. And who are they turning to in fear and desperation when they know that they're about to die? They're turning to the Christians. Now, the sad part about Afghanistan is that thanks to Western civilization's general loss of all moral capital, in fact, the moral capital that was granted to our generation by 1,000 years of other men has all been squandered in a generation. And the last few pennies dripped out the bottom of the turnstile there in Afghanistan, courtesy of the Haidenberis administration and the alleged military leaders in charge of all that. But the sad thing for the average Afghan Muslim who's about to get his head shot off, blown off, or chopped off, is that there aren't very many Christians in Afghanistan for them to turn to. Thanks to, again, the generation that has squandered the moral capital given to them by accident of their birth. Joe Biden, George W. Bush, Donald Trump, Barack Obama, these men are barely pimples on the behinds of the 1,000 years of masculinity that live to grant them the moral capital that they've all squandered in the space of 15 or 20 years. And because of them and their policies in the Middle East and elsewhere, but primarily in the Middle East, there just aren't very many Christians in the Middle East at all. In fact, there aren't any in Saudi Arabia, at least none who'll stick their head up and say, I'm a Christian. If they're in Saudi Arabia, they're hiding. And in Afghanistan, they're all going underground right now. Why? Because they fear for their lives because the Taliban is back. And the Taliban's not just back. Now they have American rifles and pistols and night vision goggles and Black Hawk helicopters and up-armored personnel carriers. Did I mention the rifles? 300,000 rifle, almost 400,000. Fully automatic, by the way, the kind the Democrats really hate. They really hate assault weapons. If you really hated them so much, why didn't you put them all in a pile and set them on fire before we left? You would think Joe Biden would have destroyed every pistol and every rifle because they're scary assault weapons. But he didn't. He didn't. In fact, the Taliban strutted around sporting their American military gear. It was really bizarre to see all that American hardware hanging off what looked like an inbred Bushman who hasn't shaved and hasn't taken a bath in months. And he's wearing all this high-tech American gear. It was really weird. How come they all look cross-eyed and inbred, by the way? What's the deal with that? Is that like a whole Middle Eastern theme? Anyway, I don't want to offend anyone. You know that. But I've just noticed it that they all look kind of cross-eyed and a little bit off. That's all. I just noticed things, okay? Like I've noticed, by the way, have you noticed there's no more white people in commercials? Have you noticed that? I mean, unless they're old commercials. If they're more than a year and a half old, you might catch a white guy here or there in a leading role. But other than that, I mean, there's just no white people left in commercials. It's all black people and brown people. And then the spectrum goes from black to somewhat black to brown to somewhat brown. And it never goes into white anymore unless they're on the ground like shining someone's shoes. You might see a white person in a commercial shining somebody's shoes or picking up leaves in their yard or snaking out their drain. That's as good as you can get as a white guy in a commercial anymore. But hey, I want to get back to Afghanistan, because if you're in Afghanistan and you're a Muslim, you're scared, you're about to get your head chopped off, you're looking for a Christian right now, but there aren't many. Estimates before the fall of Kabul? Estimates were that there were between 3,000 and 12,000 Christians in Afghanistan. That's a country of 38 million people. Some rights groups have estimated there's actually only about 1,000 Christians in Afghanistan. This is before the fall of Kabul. Definitive numbers are difficult to come by since publicly identifying as a Christian can subject an Afghan believer to beatings and death. It's from a Washington Times article. And by the way, being subject to beatings and or death by outing yourself as a Christian in Afghanistan, that was true even when George W. Bush and Barry Ho and Donald Trump and the Hyde and Barris administration went out. It's true for all of them, all the way back. So when they were in charge of Afghanistan, the most persecuted group in Afghanistan was the Christians. When the Taliban was in charge back in the 90s, the most persecuted group was the Christians. Now that the Taliban has taken over and won the war and defeated America and taken all of our guns, who's the most persecuted group? It's the Christians. Do you notice a pattern here? It's almost as if somebody's got it out for the Christians. And they live in Washington, D.C. and Virginia and Maryland and whatnot. They're not necessarily only in Kabul. The Washington Post says that non-Islamic faiths could be one of the first things targeted by the new Taliban regime as it consolidates power. Really, you think? Non-Islamic faiths? Yeah, all the Hindus and the Buddhists over there, they're terrified. It's the Christians, okay? Not to put too fine a point on it, but Christians could be the first people targeted by the Taliban. I mean, after they kidnap the girls for their own purposes, that's their main goal, is the girls and the money. That's number one. After that, they want to kill Christians. And so what happened in Afghanistan? I've been holding my fire because, you know, when the dust is flying and you don't exactly know what's happening, it's better to take a little bit of time. So was it just the senility of Joe Biden? Is it just that he wasn't paying attention, that he's a doddering old fool? And could it be that simple? Also, could it be that it was a plot to embarrass and diminish America while at the same time importing more third world Democratic voters? Could it be that it was a conspiracy? Could this be Barack Obama's final apology tour? This is how he wants to, this is his mic drop moment. You could call it the Kabul drop moment or the civil government drop moment for Barack. This is final apology tour. Goodbye. We're so sorry. We're going to give you all of the guns and everything you need to fight us because, thank you, sir, may I have another type of thing. So was it a conspiracy? Was it incompetence? Probably plenty of both to go around. But I think it's more likely that the Hyde and Barris administration, Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, Susan Rice, all four horsewomen of the apocalypse, General Milley and General Schmuckatelli and whoever the other generals were and the colonels and the brigadiers and the major generals and all the way up and down the line. It could just be that even the Secretary of State, right? I can't even remember their name. I don't even know who these people are. That's how minuscule they are. But it's quite possible that all these people were merely distracted. They were merely distracted, indulging the excesses of extreme power and extreme wealth. That they were just partying. And they simply did not realize that the barbarians at the gate could crash the gate at any moment. They just did. They were what they. I just went to get seconds at the buffet. I was getting my champagne glass refilled. What happened in Kabul? Get out of here. In fact, folks, they'll be all meeting at dinner parties this evening to make an academic exercise of it all in order to ensure that they minimize the possibility that they're ever embarrassed like this again. You know, I never realized how heavy they went on the reverb there and how far down the lead was in the mix and the bass was all up front. That's the kind of thing that makes band members hate each other for a lifetime. Why was your bass stepping all over and who put the reverb on? Anyways, let's get back to... Anyway, we should all stop and say a prayer for our brothers and sisters in Afghanistan, in Iraq, the ones hiding under the mosque in Saudi Arabia. Those people right now who have not renounced their faith are deserving of more respect than the entire generation of everyone in the West. Because they are desperately reaching for the moral capital that was laid down by 1,000 years of men living before them. They're desperately reaching for it. They want it. While here it's being squandered at a dinner party and afterwards by people who aren't even fit to shine the shoes of the men who built up that moral capital for us by their faithfulness to God. And to Jesus Christ specifically, by the way, I'll just come right out and say it. If it wasn't for Christianity, all you people would be at each other's throats constantly. You would have killed each other 1,000 years ago, all of you. Get on your knees every day and thank God that Jesus Christ came to this earth and inspired his people to keep you barbarians off each other. But no, instead you resent us. But that's fine. That's fine by me. You go right ahead. Jesus was big enough that he died for you despite the fact that you hate him and mock him and make fun of him and give his people a hard time. And so that's all. You take what you've got. And so we'll go now. Let's go deeper into the, we're now into the Ministry of Truth file, where last week we all watched on television as the families mourned the loss of their Marines and one Army soldier and one Navy corpsman. We watched as the loved ones gathered at the airfield there, and there was what they call a dignified transfer ceremony. That's where they take the bodies of the men who died. Everybody is respectful and dignified. It's called a dignified transfer ceremony. And it took place last Sunday. Joe Biden was there. I think he made a speech of some sort. Maybe. I'm not sure. I've seen him bumble through a few speeches over the past week or two. I can't tell where he is or what he's talking about. Much like him. Anyway, Biden checked his watch. That's all there is to it. Now, the story came out. People started posting on social media. Who posted? Family members who had just lost their sons in war posted that they were really offended that Joe Biden had checked his watch. And so the Ministry of Truth immediately went into action. The Ministry of Truth, by the way, are the journalists in the mainstream media, all of them. From Fox News all the way down to the bottom of the swirling toilet sucking thing at MSNBC. The whole spectrum of the mainstream media is the journalists in the Ministry of Truth. And so they all got together and they immediately challenged this idea that Joe Biden had checked his watch. In fact, USA Today tried to come out with a fact check, which that's an interesting term. Whoever thought you'd get to the point where the minute you hear the word fact check, you immediately suspect that somebody's lying. Isn't it, though? I mean, that's where we are. That's a dangerous place to be, by the way. It is funny and comical that the term fact check now makes you suspect that you're about to be lied to. And the term science means that someone's about to make up a story. It's a dangerous place to be, but you have to chuckle about it because it is funny. If, in fact, the day we start laughing about it and we start taking it as seriously as it needs to be taken, that's when we're going to be in a civil war, which would be very unfortunate and nothing to laugh about, by the way. And it's also something we don't endorse here. But USA Today tried to make the claim that, well, you know, Joe Biden checked his watch, but that was actually after the bodies had been transferred. Well, then the video came out, and it was obvious that no, it was while the bodies were being paraded right in front of him that he checked his watch, as a matter of fact. More than once. And so here it is. Breitbart reports that after significant backlash, USA Today issued a correction, admitting that Biden did check his watch during the ceremony. And they changed the rating to missing context. So they're fact check. Here's what the fact checkers do. You look at a story and the fact checker puts a stamp on it that says true or false or we don't know or still investigating. Or smoke another joint and then read it again. So they changed their untrue stamp on the fact check to a missing context. Yes, Joe Biden checked his watch, but if you understood the context more deeply, you would have understood that he had a dinner party to go to because he's trying to figure out how to never be embarrassed like this again. So, you know, he's got important things on his plate. Susan Rice is going to be there, for crying out loud. Anyway, so after a significant backlash, USA Today issued a correction admitting Biden checked his watch. The rating was then changed to missing context. So I want to ask the journalists at Breitbart, who consider themselves right-wing, but they're really not. They're just shaded this side of left. That's all. They're just shaded this way. Hey, journalists at Breitbart, what was the significant backlash? How is that significant that USA Today ends up changing their fact check rating from false to missing context? You know what significant backlash would be? Significant backlash would be if the paper was shuttered. USA Today should be shut down. There should be people marching on USA Today and not even letting anyone in the building. chaining themselves to the doors to shame these people out of existence. That's what should happen. That would be a significant backlash. If USA Today had to change their fact check status from false to going out of business sale, that would be significant. This is insignificant. In fact, USA Today has no reason to ever stop lying because there's been no... All right. Meanwhile, while all of that is going on, and Susan Rice and Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and whatever girls he brings to the dinner are all meeting to figure out how to avoid embarrassment on this level ever again, WorldNet Daily reports that Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Scheller, who was relieved of command last month for issuing a video critical of senior military leadership in light of the Afghanistan debacle, he was relieved of duty, and now he has issued his, he has submitted his resignation, as an officer is allowed to do. If you're an enlisted man, you can't just leave the military. They have to let you leave. But as an officer, you can simply walk away. And Lieutenant Colonel Stuart Scheller has submitted his resignation effective September 11th, 2021. And he cites loss of trust and confidence in his superior's ability to lead as his reason for resigning. By the way, WorldNet Daily reports, ironically, that Scheller was relieved of command by the United States Marine Corps, who issued a loss of trust and confidence in his ability to command, unquote. So they lost confidence in his. He said, well, you know what? Before you lost your confidence in me, I lost my confidence in you. I'm out of here. How about that? And he threw his silver leaves on the table because he's disgusted by the whole lot of them. Scheller served 17 years in the Marine Corps, and he could have chosen to remain silent. And he could have just rid it out and hid behind a desk for three more years so he could get his 20-year retirement. VA benefits and all of that glorious stuff. But he did not. So here's the first guy I'm aware of in any position of significance as of late who's actually said, you know what? I'm not going to do it just so I can keep my job. And by the way, this guy wasn't a clerk or a barista. This was a small unit commander in the United States Marine Corps, a lieutenant colonel. And he decided it's not worth keeping my job to go along with this. He was quoted as saying, quote, if it does go to court-martial, and it could, he said, I'll probably be found guilty. I'll probably do some jail time. But that'll give me an opportunity to read, write, and contemplate. So here is, this is another thing we should pray for, is that this guy gets thrown in jail. Because he's definitely got the right attitude. He would be a fine example to all of us, because as I've said, until those of us who have something to lose are willing to stand up and risk losing it, the collapse of our civilization around us will not stop. Well, here's a guy with something to lose. He's willing to risk losing it. He's even willing to go to jail. And, you know, he's probably got a good reading list, and it'd be a good break because, you know, jail is pretty nice. You get your three meals a day, whatever you need. You got plenty of time to read and to write and to think and to ponder and then to read some more, maybe write something. I mean, with the right reading list and the right attitude. I mean, think the Apostle Paul. Think Martin Luther King Jr., right? This fellow could enter prison as a lieutenant colonel and he could come out in the not too distant future. I mean, forget lieutenant colonel. How about the general in the right wing resistance? I'm your host, Doug McBurney. That's right, right here at the Right Wing Resistance. I'm not a general. I'm not even a corporal. Not even an E2. Perhaps the intellectual stimulation of the Right Wing Resistance as it forms and congeals and starts to come together, because somebody's got to do something about this. This has gotten out of hand, I think. I think we can all agree on that. So speaking of the Right Wing Resistance, let's return back to the Left Wing Insurgency, which has been going on for well over a year now, in its most active street militant phase. It's actually been going on for the better part of a century. But from the insurgency file, we go to San Francisco, where they have a new program up there. The governing officials in San Francisco have a program that will offer 10 individuals $300 a month each to not be involved in shootings. That I read that right from, yes, the executive director, Cheryl, of the Human Rights Commission there in San Francisco, did an interview with Newsweek magazine, and explained that the program is not transactional, but will rather focus on making investments in communities most impacted by violence. I mean, it's not transactional, except the $300 monthly transaction that goes from the coffers of the city of San Francisco into the bank account of the 10 individuals being paid monthly to not be involved in shootings. That's the part that makes it look transactional, so she had to point out that it's not. She says it's not necessarily as cut and dry as folks may think. I mean, when you see the 300 and that, you know, seems pretty cut and dry, but it's not. It's not as transactional as here's a few dollars so that you don't do something bad. But it really is about how you help us improve public safety in the neighborhood. So left-wing meaningless drivel from the lips of executive director Cheryl there in San Francisco. Help us improve public safety. Okay. Participants will be paired with life coaches from the city's street violence intervention program. That's another program that's not transactional, funded by the government there in San Francisco. And participants will be considered community ambassadors who work to prevent violence. The program is going to get at the root causes of violence, which in so many ways are economic, according to Cheryl. Insulting all people, all poor people, basically, implying that poor people are criminal, which is ridiculous. What else does Cheryl have to say? We need to be getting to the root causes of why some neighborhoods are, like, safer than others. What are the root causes? Cheryl, maybe intact families versus not? No, you're not allowed to bring that up. Stop it. That's right-wing, misogynistic, patriarchal. Stop it. We'll have none of that here. The transactional program, paying $300 a month to various derelicts not to be involved in shootings, it'll be funded through the Dream Keeper Initiative. Not the Promise Keepers, the Dream Keepers. Forget about promises. These people are just dreamers. They dream that you can pay people $300 a month to not be involved in shootings. But what's worse than dreaming it, they're actually doing it. The Dream Keeper Initiative is San Francisco's effort to redirect funding into the black community. Again, implying that black people are somehow more criminal. Which should be an insult to everyone, black, white, brown, but especially black. And especially if you're not in the top tier of economic whatever strata. If you're black and lower middle class, they basically consider you a criminal. They want to put you on the payroll so that you won't shoot other people. So if more black fathers were staying home and taking care of their families, they would be insulted by this. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Let's see, gun violence in San Francisco, by the way, for the year 2021, it's increased somewhat over 2020. They're about double the shootings this year as there were last year at this point. And you know what that is? The people being shot down, gunned down, viciously murdered in the streets of San Francisco and every other major metropolitan city in America. You know what that is? That's the ransom being paid to those who took our cities hostage last summer. Our governing officials, our left-wing governing officials, however they were elected, and I put that in quotation marks at this point, however they were elected, what they're doing is they're taking our money and paying ransom to criminals who burned down banks and stores and took entire city blocks hostage last summer. It's similar to what we're about to start doing with the Taliban, as they have apparently begun to take hostages, at least to some degree. They're not letting planes leave like they told Uncle Joe they would. Oh, it's going to be fine. Everyone who wants to leave will be allowed to leave. But the Taliban says no. So we're paying hostage takers in our own streets, and the federal government in international affairs is going to start paying hostages or start paying ransoms to the Taliban. So the whole country, America, has basically become a hostage state. We're going to live the rest of my natural life in some state of a pandemic, lockdown, freak-out, hysterical event, and a hostage crisis that may never end in my lifetime. All right, so let's get out of the international affairs. Let's get away from all that, the insurrection and the right-wing resistance and all of that. We'll jump into the widespread deception file, and there's a lot of deception going on out there, folks. We've all been lied to so many times over the past year and a half about everything from science to medicine to politics to who's black, who's white, who's a boy, who's a girl. There's just been so many lies that, there's widespread deception happening. It's got its own file here at the Weekly Worldview. And I want to talk about an associate of mine who is in the medical industry, a licensed medical professional who may or may not have come into a COVID-like, a vector. She may have crossed paths. Somebody might have it, right? There might be a positive person in her life. And when it was mentioned to her that she might want to follow the ivermectin recipe that we've all heard about and that so many people have followed to recover in the early stages of COVID, when it was suggested to this medical professional that she might consider ivermectin, along with some other things, she actually responded, "Isn't that horse medicine?" Horse medicine. This is a medical professional. So let me just introduce you to William Campbell and Omura Satoshi. They are researchers in the medical field. They're also trained medical professionals. William Campbell discovered the anthelmintic compound ivermectin and proved it to be vital in the control of certain parasitic infections in humans. Omura Satoshi basically derived ivermectin from its base, avermectin, and created a drug used to control certain parasitic diseases in humans. For their contributions to the discovery of ivermectin and the isolation of ivermectin, these two men won the 2015 Nobel Prize for Physiology or Medicine for work with ivermectin in human beings. And by the way, ivermectin also works on parasitic infections in other animals. But the Nobel Prizes that they won were not for the animals. They were for the discovery that helped human beings. And anti-parasitics have been entertained and then used in the treatment of various respiratory infections, including the latest COVID. And it's not horse medicine, but even people who are in medicine have been deceived by all of the lies and the constant propaganda being vomited upon all of us all the time. It's very difficult sometimes to know exactly what's true and exactly what is a lie. Again, deeper into the widespread deception file, where a new CDC study, that's a study ran by the Centers for Disease Control, they had a team set out to determine how close the U.S. might be to herd immunity. And what they found through a survey of blood donations is that approximately twice as many Americans have had COVID and have some immunity to it. About twice as many as previous estimates. And the previous ones were just that, estimates. They were models. They were bureaucrats sitting around a room. I don't know if they were throwing darts at a chart. I don't know what they were doing. This is actual screenings of actual surveys of actual blood donations. This is real science. And the team from the CDC determined that more than 80% of Americans 16 and older have some level of immunity against SARS-CoV-2, meaning that the death rate should be about half of what it is being reported. And twice as many people are, yeah. Okay, so, by the way, the team that set out to see if how close we are to herd immunity, at the end of the survey, they said, well, it's twice as many have had it and twice as many are immune, but we have no idea about herd immunity. They claim they cannot get a handle on herd immunity. Why? Because they've been told they can't do that. They've been told they can't mention herd immunity. Apparently their jobs depend on it. And they're willing to do and say that they don't know just to keep their jobs. Even though anyone with half a brain knows that if 80% of the population has some immunity, that equals herd immunity. I'm sorry. Or it always did before the Ministry of Truth came in and started changing definitions, changing encyclopedia entries, and making everything insane and crazy and really weird. Speaking of really weird, let's get down to something really weird. I have a question. This is from the widespread file. Not widespread anything, just widespread. Cornell University. Over at Cornell, did you know that 95% of the campus population is vaccinated? That's right, 95%. But Cornell has five times the amount of confirmed positive cases now than it did at this time last year. Why is that? Maybe they're not wearing their masks. No, they're all wearing their masks all the time. It looks like a colony of praying mantises at Cornell University. Everybody with their bug face and their mask. Oh, maybe they're just doing more tests. Well, no, it turns out they did more tests back in the fall of 2020 than they're doing now, but they have five times the positivity rate. How can this be? Well, and that's what's going on. I mean, I'm asking that because I don't know. Something's going on because people are getting sick. I mean, I went through a year and a half of this epidemic, and I knew of some people who thought they had it. Some said they might have it. Some were sure they had it. Others got tested and tested positive. One teenager I know, he got isolated in his bedroom for 2 weeks. He was in paradise, playing video games, talking on the phone, throwing his schoolwork in the circular file for 2 weeks because he tested positive. Kid wasn't sick. I mean, I just never knew anyone who got all that sick, frankly. Never knew anyone who went to the hospital. I certainly never knew of anyone, even tangentially, who went to the hospital and died. I just didn't. Well, now, here we are a year later, and people are getting sick, and people are going into the hospital. And I want to know what's going on, because it's very strange. In August, early September, people are getting sick. Is it possible the vaccinations are making the epidemic more widespread? Well, I don't know. It's possible. I mean, since mRNA technology had never been injected into a single human test subject before all this, this, by the way, being the biggest, greatest, largest science experiment in all of history. You go from zero to hundreds of millions of people getting this injection. And so we don't know what the ramifications are. It's possible that this vaccination, it could help. It could be making it worse because there was a study out of either Israel or Japan. I'll link to it. I forgot to print it out. But it reported that vaccinated people could maintain a viral load in their snot locker of 1,000 times what was being measured last year at this time. Well, why is that? Well, we don't. And by the way, that means they have 1,000 times the viral load before they feel sick. And that's how things go around, you know. it's that you catch a virus, you start to build a viral load as the virus insinuates itself into your physiology, and then eventually you get enough of a viral load that you get sick, and then you get sick and you stay home. But there's a time right before you get sick that you're carrying around enough of the virus to make other people sick. And that's how these things spread. And it's quite possible that the vaccination is causing vaccinated people to carry this enormous viral load that could be infecting other vaccinated people and certainly unvaccinated people. And by the way, if the vaccinated people, if that's what's happening, I don't have any animosity toward the vaccinated people. It's not like anybody's out there trying to make other people sick. It's just that we've never done this before. And we don't know what the ramifications are. And here we all are in a giant social petri dish, and people are getting sick and thinking people just want to know what's going on. It's the Weekly Worldview. That's right. I'm Doug McBurney. Welcome back. I'm joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. And so glad to have her here with me. You know, recently we discovered that it's quite possible that that in our life, it seems that Andouille sausage got a bad shake at some time in the distant past. We've always maintained the position that Andouille sausage was no good. Why? Because we had an Andouille sausage that was bad, and that was probably 20 years ago. And it was lousy. And so we thought that was it. And then just a couple of days ago, we had some Andouille sausage, and we're like, wait a second. Wait a second. This is phenomenal. This is awesome. Wow. What have we been missing out on? So never judge a gastronomic adventure by one event, apparently. And by the way, Alabama-style fried chicken, never even heard of it. Didn't even know that Alabama was on the map for anything. Never heard of that. Was Alabama famous for anything? I mean, besides the Thompson, the Thompson couple out, that's it. That's all Alabama was known for. But now Alabama's on the map. Boom! Alabama-style fried chicken. If you haven't had it, I want to recommend you try it because you will like it. And you'll know Alabama will be big and bright on your map, too, because, wow, was that something else. All right, now we're going to jump into – I have to go fast now because I'm almost out of time and I have a lot of stuff that I would like to tell you about. We're going to jump into the fear and loathing file where at the bottom – of the foamy residue circling the drain of the fear and loathing file resides one Don Lemon. And he was on TV last Tuesday. Why? I have no idea. And I caught what you're about to read. I happened to catch it live, which is unusual. Not just for me, but for anyone to catch anything live on CNN. It's just unusual. We've all seen the ratings book, okay? But anyway, Don Lemon, everybody's in commercial. I happen across CNN, and I see the mug of Don Lemon and the muscle-bound BS artist with the smart aleck, heathen piece of garbage, mafia connected. I can't remember his name, but the guy with the fake 50-pound dumbbell sitting at his desk. 100. What's his name? Fredo. Oh, it's a 100-pound dumbbell, is it? Fake 100-pound dumbbell. Fredo Cuomo, that's it. His mug and Fredo Cuomo's mug are there on the screen, so of course I stop. Just for opposition research, you might call it. And I hear Don Lemon say the following. Hey, if you're not going to get vaccinated, by the way, Fredo had just done a story of a woman who died of cancer, and Fredo blamed it on unvaccinated people taking up space in the hospital. I didn't catch the whole story and how he quite made that connection. I don't know if the Cuomo family was involved in bumping anyone off in that story. But basically, they blamed unvaccinated people for a woman who died of cancer. And then Lemon comes on and he says, look, if you're not going to get vaccinated, you don't want to social distance, you don't want to wear a mask, maybe you don't want to go to the hospital when you get sick. I know that sounds harsh, but you're taking up the space for other people who are doing things the right way. And you and I both agree, Fredo, this is going to be between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated moving forward in this country. If you don't want to play by the rules, you end up in the hospital, well, I feel bad, but maybe you shouldn't go and take resources from someone else. That's it. And Lemon concluded, that's how I feel, and I have no apologies. Despite the fact that he wedged an I feel bad in the middle of all that. Did you catch that? After basically wishing death upon people who disagree with him about healthcare decisions, by the way, private healthcare decisions, he wishes death and suffering on them. He wishes they die in an alley in a puddle face down behind the hospital. Don't go in the hospital. You should die wedged between the dumpster and the hospital. So he wishes all that upon us, and then, not us. I mean the unvaccinated people out there. And then he says, oh, by the way, I feel bad. Really? You feel bad? You just wish death on all those people. And then you go on for another 45 seconds wishing more death and more suffering on more people. And then you say you have no apologies. And then you say, by the way, I feel bad. I don't think Don Lemon feels bad. In fact, this actually it proves once again one of my truths of life that I've noticed. Is that being a liberal means never having to say you're sorry, ever. Even as the jetpack straight to hell is being cinched onto the back of Don Lemon, the pole is being greased. He's being tipped upside down and slapped against the pole. Even as they light the fuse on the jetpack, on the jet rocket, Don Lemon will never say he's sorry. That's it. And that's what being a liberal is. And you know what, Don? You can have all that. Meanwhile, we go to reason number 116. Reason number 116 to get or keep your children out of the government schools is from the original list of 666 reasons to get or keep your kids out of the government schools. Reason number 116, your child may be shot and killed at school. That's right, a shooting at a North Carolina school last Wednesday left one student killed and another arrested. Stop for just a moment. Just a urinalism flash here. Hey, urinalists. So you read this sentence, a shooting left one student killed and another arrested. So you can't tell if either one of these students were actually involved. Or you certainly can't tell if anyone was responsible for anything. You can barely tell if either one of these students were involved, except that one of them is dead and one was arrested. So you assume they had something to do with the shooting. But it was the shooting that left one killed and when arrested. I'm sorry if I digress into grammatical manias every once in a while, but it drives me crazy, that's all. Anyway, noon at Mount Tabor High School, there was a shooting, police said. So what's what the police said in every article, by the way, you journalists? I mean, it's as if that could be the police say there was a shooting, and they say it was Mount Tabor High School. We don't even know that the school was called Mount Tabor. We don't know if there was anything or shooting. That's just what the police said. Okay, I guess that's what they teach at journalism school. Nobody can be responsible for anything, and we can't know anything for certain. We can only know what we've heard. Apparently. Anyway, the high school went into lockdown. Kids were hiding under their desks. They were terrified and thinking they might be shot and killed for approximately 6 hours. Until about 6 p.m. when the suspected shooter, a fellow classmate of the one left killed by the shooting, a fellow classmate was finally taken into custody. One mom said, quote, you can't trust your kids to be safe at school or home or anywhere anymore, unquote. And I know that that's mom is obviously an emotional basket case after wondering if her child or children were dead for 6 hours. She's probably a mess. But I would just, hey, mom, they are actually safe at home. You can't trust your kids to be safe at school. I agree. Anywhere else, pretty much I agree. Yeah, you can, but at home, they are safe. If your children are at home and they're doing school at home, nobody's going to pull out a gun and shoot them dead. They're not going to get into an argument with another boy over a girl and then someone gets shot dead. That's just not going to happen at home. At least not at our home. So I would suggest that anyone who has any second thoughts about sending their kids into the government schools because they're concerned about their safety, just keep them home. You might be surprised how much of a relief it is. And your kids will actually learn how to read. That's a bonus on top of all that. We go from there to reason number 1,114. To get or keep your children out of the government schools, their teacher might be a Marxist insurrectionist. That's right. A California high school teacher named Gabrielle Gippe was interviewed by an undercover journalist for Project Veritas. I'll link to this, you see pictures of Gippe's classroom where they has an Antifa flag hanging and a picture of Chairman Mao on the wall. And he told the guys over at Project Veritas, "I have 180 days to turn the students into revolutionaries." And then he goes on to use some vulgarities and some profanities to describe himself and his worldview. And he says, you know, I post up a calendar every week. I have students go to protests. I have them go and distribute food in the community. That's how they get their extra credit. So he gets the students to participate in Marxist insurrectionist type protests and to distribute food to people who did not earn the money to buy the food, to further promulgate the idea of socialism and Marxism and class warfare and all that. And that's how they get extra credit in Chairman Gippe's class. Gippe also told the undercover journalist from Project Veritas, like, why aren't people just taking up arms? Why can't we take up arms against the state? Unquote. That's what he said. He's a public school teacher. He shouldn't be teaching in the public schools. He should probably be sitting in a cell awaiting a trial on charges of insurrection. But no, it's not. He's teaching your kids, not mine. He's not teaching any of mine. He's not getting within 50 feet of my kids. Let's go from there into the genocide file. We're out at Duquesne University. Professor Derek says, he quoted another professor who argued that it would be, quote, ethical for white people to kill themselves, unquote. White people should kill themselves as an ethical act. Take this opportunity to castrate whiteness. That was South African philosophy professor, I'm not going to give his name because I can't pronounce it, number one, and this guy doesn't deserve any press. This South African professor gave made the statement in 2016 about white people saying they should take the opportunity to castrate whiteness and as a yada, 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 yada. And the professor out at Duquesne said that, well, I think there was something ethical in the South African professor's statement. He concedes that that this African professor, South African professor, might just be too aggressive in his arguments. The South African professor, by the way, is a practitioner, a scholar and practitioner of psychoanalysis. Wow. So a student of Sigmund Freud, who's one of the top 10 people responsible for the decline and fall of Western civilization. And we've got professors at Duquesne quoting radical professors from South Africa calling on white people to kill themselves as an ethical, basically an obligation to. So, by the way, teaching young people this will lead to genocide. That's where it will lead. That's where it leads every time throughout all of human history. And that's where we're headed if something doesn't change dramatically. So we go from there into the queering of medicine file. You've heard about the queering of America. Now it's trickled down from just queering the state and queering the culture in general to specifics. A family planning fellow at the University of Michigan. Now just let that sink in. The University of Michigan has a family planning fellow. You know, normally they would have an archaeological fellow or an architectural fellow. That's an expert who comes in and helps to broaden the educational experience of students and faculty. Well, this one's a family planning fellow. And he's created some videos to show healthcare workers how to interact with biological men and women who are living as their opposite sex, formerly known as trannies. He posted a blog on the university website, and he says, "I came into medicine with a passion for issues of health and gender, reproductive justice, and caring for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer community." Unquote. That's, he got into medicine to, yeah. So here is a homosexual baby-killing heathen who is a family planning fellow at the University of Michigan. And he's trying to tell medical professionals that delusional behavior on the part of mentally deranged people who think they're the opposite sex, that it's appropriate, it's good, and they need to learn how to deal with it on a medical level, you know. And by the way, he's doing it with the support of a grant from, I don't know, I hope it wasn't from me. I hope I didn't fund this grant. His videos promote the redefinition of biological sex based on feelings, according to the journalist there at Breitbart. So we're going to teach young medical professionals that feelings affect biological sex. Apparently, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking this, but I don't think it's a good idea to confuse young doctors about biological basic things like anatomy and genetics and sex. And I just don't think that ends well. We go from there to reason number 1,113 to get or keep your children out of government schools. A second grade teacher in Bellingham, Washington, told the kids in her class it was wrong to assume a little girl is a little girl just because she's wearing a dress and looks like a girl. That's just wrong. And she told the class that when they see a picture of a little girl, they should use the pronouns they and them to describe the person, not her. This is from ToddStarnes.com. And Todd Starnes, the definition of a mainstream political hack, Todd Starnes says the following. If a second grade teacher doesn't have the intellect to tell the difference between a boy and a girl, she, he, or they have no business in a public school classroom. Golly darn it. And so you read this, and I've listened to Todd Starnes for years, and I just want to say, you know, Mr. Starnes, it's so far beyond all that. And for you to kind of joke around about this at this point, and because we know that the second grade teacher, the psychopath, she knows the difference between a boy and a girl. That's not up for, we know that. We know that she's evil and that she is perpetrating evil upon innocent young children is what she's doing. And it's nothing to joke about, Mr. Starnes. I would posit that you, Mr. Starnes, are one of the bigger reasons why we lost the culture war. I would posit the accusation, Mr. Starnes, that you are one of the bigger reasons why we lost the culture war. You and people like you refusing to point out the absolute truths and the evil of these people. For decades, you've snickered at it, lit up a cigar and chuckled at it, and written a column and sent it out for syndication and collected your pay for decades and not pointed out how evil it was and how these people are enemies of everything that's right and good and that they should be arrested and this kind of stuff should be illegal. So for decades, you chuckled instead of pointing it out. And because why did you not point it out in stark terms that could have stopped some of this, if not all of this? It's because you knew it would cost you whatever pathetic living you've eked out in the mainstream media. You did it to keep your job. You stopped short of pointing out how evil and destructive and corrosive and criminal all this is so that you could keep your job. And you did that to the point that eventually led us to where we are now, where the truth is being lost on far too many people. far too many people. It may never be attained again on the level it was when I was coming up in my lifetime. We may never get back there. We may never get back there, Mr. Starnes, and it's nothing to joke about. No more Snickers, no more lighting up the cigar. It's time to get serious. All right, speaking of serious, let's go to the serious hysteria file where actress Bette Midler, is she an actress, really? Bette Midler, who's a famous person, we'll just call her a famous person, which is, it's like a birthing person, except she's just famous. Bette Midler reacted to the Texas heartbeat law. By the way, the heartbeat law is a law that regulates the killing of innocent people. Tells doctors and other people when and where they can kill an innocent person. The folks at Breitbart say it bans most abortions after 6 weeks. Most, by the way, in this case means none. I don't want to get off into it because I'm running out of time. But trust me, most means none. Here's what Bette Midler says. She says, "I suggest that all women refuse to have sex with men." Yeah. And you know what? I actually agree with Bette Midler. I think that all women outside of marriage should refuse to have sex with men. I think that would be a great start. I think Bette Midler has accidentally stumbled backwards into some good advice. Hey, all you women out there, if you're not married to the guy, don't have sex with him. That would avoid a lot of problems. Me and Bette Midler agree that maybe I should leave it at that. No. In 2019, you'll remember, I covered this, actress and left-wing activist, not necessarily in that order, Alyssa Milano urged women to abstain from sex with men. Well, but apparently that didn't take because that was 2019. And pigs and sluts like Alyssa Milano and Bette Midler and the other sluts that they influence apparently continued to just go along and just be sluts. And now we find ourselves in an even deeper problem. What do we have from Cher? Do we even want to do anything on Cher? Cher reacted to the Texas law. She says, quote, "I'm wondering when the Texas Senate will start mandating burkas." Speaking of burkas, Cher, could someone please throw a sack over you? Because you're like decomposing right before our eyes and it's disturbing. So, you know, no, there's nothing worse than seeing an aging, used-up, decomposing slut ranting and raving. I mean, that's the last. Someone throw, forget a burka, just an onion sack, a burlap. All right, meanwhile, we finally go to the personhood, or is it subhuman file? You decide. In light of the Texas court decision to regulate the killing of innocent children and set an arbitrary time frame in which you might be able to do it, but if you follow other certain rules, you might be able to do it after 6 weeks, but only if you do it this way, and that way. In light of that, CNN brought aboard Jeffrey Toobin to give his opinion on it. And Jeffrey Toobin did. And he did it with a straight face. Believe it or not. Why? Because being a liberal means never having to say you're sorry. And I'm not talking about the Zoom incident. That he doesn't need to apologize for that. That's the least of his problems. Jeffrey Toobin once impregnated a co-worker's daughter and then pressured her to get an abortion. So he knows all about abortion. He's used it or tried to. The girl refused. But being a liberal, never have to say you're sorry. Never. Even when they strap the rockets on you, Jeff. All right, that's the Weekly Worldview for this week. I want to thank my friends at American Right to Life and at the Personhood Alliance. And I want to thank my other brother, Daryl, for making it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.